It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The key fraud is the mail-in ballot. That was the backup in case they fell too far behind. That's why they cut off the vote at midnight, 1 o'clock, when President Trump was getting too far ahead, particularly in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, and also in Pennsylvania. So they cut off the vote. He was getting up to 800,000 in Pennsylvania, 300,000 in Michigan. He was even further ahead in Wisconsin. They cut off the vote. They turned things off. They chased everybody out. And then it's not your concern, except for the fact that you got to look at this somewhat in total. They started bringing in false ballots. We have three witnesses to 100,000 of those ballots being brought in at 4:30 in the morning in Detroit with no Republicans around that they knew of. Luckily, we had two that stayed behind and a Dominion employee who was willing to be honest. Not all of them are honest.
All right, that was the voice, familiar voice of Rudy Giuliani in Arizona yesterday, where there was a hearing, a public hearing on what happened in Arizona. In Arizona, Joe Biden leads President Trump by 11,000 votes, and that's very marginal. So the state is trying to get the governor and the powers that be to do something about this. And there are people in the legislature who actually want to do something about this, and they were at the hearing. They're the ones that it's not an official hearing in the Capitol because officials like I think it's the head of the Senate in the Arizona legislature is by and large a Republican body. But of course they are Republican means nothing anymore. Do I need to explain that to you? Some people are conservative Republicans who want to do what's right, and others are just along for the ride. And they would just assume President Trump would just step away and, you know, let things begin. And let's all turn our eyes to Arizona and the Senate race, because that's all that matters. It does matter a great deal. And I don't want to discourage any of you from participating down there. But let me just say, I just think the whole notion that we should just move on from this debacle known as the 2020 presidential election is ridiculous. You're going to be encouraged to do that. Some of you probably are feeling discouraged because you're not hearing news from many sources that encourage you. And that's why I'm going to bring you what is the truth. They want you to be discouraged because they want you to give up. So this is kind of a character test for all of us. Have you ever been, you know, whether even it's your faith, trying to defend your faith in a hostile culture, do you really believe what you believe? Because if you don't, then you start to waver. I just want to assure you that what we're telling you is the truth, and we're not going to give up. We're not going to give up because the truth is very powerful. I think that's the reason why they're getting so loud about, mocking and telling us to get behind it. But they're really not fighting back. Let's just say their protestations are not as loud as they might be, because I think they fear that they've done stuff that is so bad that if much investigation goes forward, it will be the end. And they know that this is like on a precipice, but they want you to think that it's over because they want you to give up, so don't do that. All right, Arizona. The lawmakers who were there heard testimony from several people, and there are 11, by the way, Electoral College votes from Arizona, and they have been awarded to Joe Biden. But the state house has the power to rescind that and take it back, and that's what they're trying to get the state house to do. And so in this hearing yesterday, there was a specialist. His name is Phil Waldron. He's a cybersecurity expert and a retired Army colonel. And I just want to give you an idea. Let me just give you a couple of things that he said. He said, our teams looked at spirographs on the Dominion network on election day and showed the increased web traffic, internet traffic, and election day for Dominion servers. The question is, of course, these voting machines are not supposed to be connected to the internet because that's when they could be manipulated, when people from other places can change the numbers. And Dominion claims they're not connected to the internet, but he says they are. He said they are connected to the internet. There is no transparency of how the voter information is processed, moved, and stored. And as a matter of fact, these companies have refused to allow any type of inspection into their code. In 2016, by the way, President Trump won Arizona by less than 100,000 votes. And in the 17 presidential elections between 1952 and 2016, there has been only one Democratic candidate to win Arizona, and that was Bill Clinton. All right, so let's go back to Colonel Waldron, because he was asked a pivotal question by one of the members of Arizona's legislature, and this is what he said, clip 8.
When we're talking about it was Mr. Krebs? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. He stated the most secure election in history. He stated we're not connected to the internet. He stated no votes leave this country. This is all things he's stated. He's stated publicly.
So on the CISA website, correct?
Right. So are you willing to say under oath that you have seen the connection to the internet? You have seen it go offshore to Germany, Frankfurt. Are these things that you have personally seen and can say that is not true?
Our white hat hackers, yes, they have that traffic in the packets.
So why would he make that kind of comment, do you think?
Either not knowing, believing the myth, or not wanting the truth to be known.
Yeah, there's more to it than that, and I did tell you a week before last, but I want to reiterate that statement by the Homeland Security Division on cybersecurity that our election was so fair and honest, on their board is Dominion and Smartmatic. That's the deciding body who gave you that little speech about how perfect the election was. So it can't be trusted, and the person that's leading that, again, I told you, is an ever-Trumper who should have been removed a long time ago, but here we go again, right? It's been happening repeatedly. So, a volunteer poll observer also testified. Her name is Orth. Her last name is Orth. And she said in Pima County, she had been told by state election officials to allow people to vote who may not have been properly registered to vote in Arizona on election day. I was having to allow people to vote who literally had just moved here. A large percentage had addresses from two different apartment complexes. Many of them were residents for not more than a month, and she went on to say that she came across one poll worker who said he was there from Los Angeles, and he told her he was there to turn Arizona blue. She also said that she also talked about a room where they're much like the story of some of these other states where the counting, she was not allowed in, the counting was taking place. And so she had quite a long testimony. Colonel Waldron, I had another exchange with Rudy Giuliani that I want you to hear. So let's listen. It's clip 9.
Just to make it simple, a Dominion machine that I go in and vote, it is susceptible to easily having that vote changed from the outside or by them in particular.
By an authorized user or an unauthorized user?
By an authorized or unauthorized user?
Correct.
As
a
well?
A hacker.
A hacker. So my vote is only as good as the integrity of Dominion and all the hackers that exist that can get into the Dominion machine.
Your vote is not as secure as your Venmo account.
Pardon me? Say that one more time.
Your vote is not as secure as your Venmo account.
All right. So that was the Colonel Phil Waldron talking to Rudy Giuliani. That was Arizona yesterday. And of course, they're trying to get the legislature there to take back their constitutional right to withdraw the registration of Joe Biden as the winner in Arizona. So we'll see what happens there. Back to Georgia, because we talked about Georgia a great deal yesterday. So the attorneys for President Trump are filing all kinds of lawsuits Yesterday, they fired another one. I'm going to give you just as best I can, because I told you this is a challenge for me to keep up with all the states. I don't have a reporter in Georgia to go to. I have to remember all of this and try to make it concise, and that's what I'm going to try to do. This is kind of, in a nutshell, at least in part, what the attorneys are arguing against the state of Georgia. The rejection rate for mail-in ballots in 2016 in Georgia was 2.9%. In 2018, it was 3.46%, and in 2020, 0.34%. Now, what that means is, if the historical rejection rates or an average of those had held, there would have been 38,000 to 45,000 ballots rejected in 2020 rather than 4,471. That is 3 to 4 times the margin of victory. In other words, they were very lax with how they accepted mail-in ballots. The Georgia Secretary of State declared the rejection rate was the same as years past, but that's not true. He has confused two different categories of ballots, either on purpose or by accident, because he didn't understand. The Georgia Secretary of State listed different numbers in a press release than what was certified. He also claims there were only 464 ballots rejected for signatures in 2018, but there actually were 230 different types of rejections, including insufficient oath information or no signature. So there are all kinds of things going on with that. In fact, I want you to hear then what Secretary of State Raffensperger, he did a bit of a press conference yesterday or made a statement. This is the Secretary of State of Georgia, and this is what he had to say about the way things are right now in Georgia.
Once that is complete, our office, continuing our work to be transparent as possible, will be releasing the recount results online as quickly as possible. That is the great thing about our paper ballot system. It is auditable, it is recountable, and can provide voters the confidence that the outcomes are correct. Once this recount is complete, everyone in Georgia will be able to have even more confidence in the results of our elections. Despite the massive amounts of misinformation that is being spread by dishonest actors, there are those who are exploiting the emotions of many Trump supporters with fantastic claims, half-truths, misinformation, and frankly, they are misleading the president as well, apparently. There are two suits in federal court right now. One was already shot down and is being appealed. The other is just beginning. That is the due process.
I'm going to jump in. All right, so I'm going to jump in because I'm going to run out of time here. I want to remind you that Sidney Powell has alleged that Brad Raffensperger and the governor have cooperated with this Dominion Systems, making some sort of a deal that she alleges in her lawsuit I'm not going to say the details of that because I'm not sure. I have an impression, but I better be careful. Let me just say that that's what she's alleging, that they're in on it, and that's why they rushed to certify, and that's why Raffensperger, allegedly, is trying to tell you how wonderful the results are and how pure the process. A former FBI special agent, someone I'd never heard of, his name is Derek Somerville, and he by himself went through 580,000 registered voters in the Peach State, and he found that over 57,000 cast ballots in a county different than where they reside. He found 17,000 ballots with out-of-state mail requests. And he talks about how he personally reviewed all of those, and he said he feels like there's a serious problem. So it's not just Sidney, it's not just the president's attorneys, it's lots of people. And by the way, now with this runoff coming up, lots of Democratic groups are trying to register dead people. They're also trying to get people from out of town to vote. And so it's called Operation New Voter Registration Georgia. And they have plans. They want to take back the Senate. And they might do it if we don't sort this out. So we have to fight. Coming up next, a stunning story that we need to address. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Hi, it's Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, the words that John pens early in his gospel are truly comforting, aren't they? Knowing that God fulfilled his promise of bringing Jesus to us and that he's with us and for us. And yet, you know what? Most evangelicals outside of the U.S. in places where Bible League serves, like Asia, Africa, and the Middle East, have never read those words. They can't open their Bible on a daily basis and be reminded of God's precious promises. So how wonderful this Advent season if many Christians around the world could open their own Bible and read for themselves, "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us." Learn how you can be a blessing to these believers praying for a Bible by calling 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD, or visit sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org.
Giving a Bible to somebody is the greatest gift you can give somebody in life.
Children's hearts around the world have been touched and opened to Christ with Operation Christmas Child Shoebox Gifts. The next step is the greatest journey. Your gift of $6 provides evangelism and discipleship for children and multiplication of the church in over 100 countries worldwide. Join with AFR and other listeners in this powerful outreach, sending the gospel into the corners of the world. Since 2009, as a result of this program, nearly 9 million children have made decisions to follow Christ. You can send one child on the greatest journey for just $6. $60 reaches 10 children. $150 reaches 25 children. Your donation provides instruction materials and 12 discipleship lessons in a child's own language, led by a teacher trained by Samaritan's Purse. Call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or donate online at AFR.net and help send children on the greatest journey.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
At Liberty University, we believe in honoring service. That's why we offer first responder and military communities deep discounts on all of our 450-plus online programs. Military students, veterans, and spouses pay just $250 per credit hour for undergraduate and $275 to $300 per credit hour for graduate and PhD courses. First responders receive a 25% tuition discount, and those who qualify may be able to use both discounts for even greater savings. It's our way to say thank you for all you do. To learn more, text AGREE to 49595.
Raphael Warnock is the pastor of the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. He is also running as a Democrat for the U.S. Senate. But Pastor Warnock holds many beliefs that are contrary to the teachings of the Bible. For example, he once said abortion is consistent with his Christian beliefs. He also said that man cannot serve both God and the military. He's also a big fan of Reverend Jeremiah Wright, the man who once asked God to condemn America. In 2016, during the presidential election, Warnock called on Americans to repent of its worship of whiteness. Kelly Loeffler is Warnock's opponent. She condemned his race-baiting rhetoric, said it was disgusting and offensive. She rightly pointed out that we are all created in God's image. We are his children. So if Pastor Warnock has a problem with the color of my skin, he can take that up with the Almighty. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
There is anger, outrage, and a little bit of anxiety here in Tehran after Iran's top nuclear scientist was assassinated in a brazen attack in broad daylight. Now, senior officials in the country have been calling for swift revenge for his assassination. The head of Iran's armed forces says that the country must revenge his assassination immediately. Others have been saying that if a swift blow isn't delivered to the United States and Israel, it'll only embolden the enemy. Also, paramilitary groups have staged a demonstration this evening saying that no U.S. assets should remain safe in this region over the next 40 days. Now, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was the father of Iran's nuclear program. This is going to be a big dent to the country, to their nuclear program. It's also going to expose a major security breach in the country and raise a lot of questions as to why Iran's top nuclear scientist was exposed this way. Now, although it's probably not going to close down Iran's nuclear program, it is going to make negotiations with the United States and the future Biden administration very complicated.
All right, that was Ali Aruzi for CNBC. And of course, this killing assassination took place last Friday. You know, while we've been talking about the election, and it is important, and I'm committed to talking about that until we prevail, but there are a lot of things happening internationally, and this one has tremendous implications, not only for what's happening in the world, but also for this election and the decision that has to be made about who's going to sit in the Oval Office. And so we must talk about what happened last Friday, what the implications are to our future, depending on who sits in that seat. I've asked Claire Lopez to join us this morning. She's the founder and president of Lopez Liberty. She, of course, she's been our guest many times, but Claire is an expert on all things Middle East, certainly Iran, and also the Muslim Brotherhood, and we've talked many times about that. She was the vice president for research and analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She, before that, she worked for the London Center for Policy Research. She was with the agency, as we call it, for a number of years. And she joins us this morning. Claire, thanks for coming with us.
Oh, good morning, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
All right. That was a pretty good report. Not a lot of details, but I do want to start by just asking you, who exactly was Mohsen Fakhrizadeh? Is that correct pronunciation?
Pretty good, yeah. So I think it's disingenuous when I hear reporters like that calling him Iran's top nuclear scientist. Yes, he was a nuclear engineer. Yes, he comes out of the IRGCs, that's the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Imam Hussein University, that's true. But Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was an IRGC brigadier general, and he was in charge. He was the director of Iran's nuclear weapons program. That's a lot more than just a nuclear scientist. He headed an organization at the Ministry of Defense, the Iranian Ministry of Defense. He headed something called the Organization for Defensive Innovation and Research Group since 2007, and he headed even earlier than that a program within that group, within that organization, in the Ministry of Defense, called Ahmad, A-M-A-D. And we might remember that name perhaps from the briefing that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gave a couple of years ago, back in 2018, when he described the heist of all of those secret documents about Iran's nuclear weapons program from under their noses out of a warehouse in Tehran. And that heist took place back in 2016, but we didn't hear about it until a couple of years ago. So this is who Fakhrizadeh was. He was a very important person in terms of Iran's clandestine nuclear weapons program, not the overt one that everybody sees and talks about, but the clandestine one.
All right. So everyone's saying, of course, that Israel did this and that America was, with the support of the Americans. And that might be true. But do we know that for sure, Claire? Are there like signs or indications that we know who might have been responsible for this?
Well, you know, the default position of the Iranian regime is always going to be to blame the Israelis. You know, as usual, the Israeli government is not saying one way or the other whatever they might know about this assassination. And as you said, it took place last Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, on the 27th of November. And what happened is that Fakhrizadeh's motorcade was ambushed on a highway something like 50 miles east of Tehran, and one of the vehicles in the motorcade apparently was targeted with a bomb explosion, which stopped the motorcade, and then the vehicle in which Fakhrizadeh was riding was shot up by assassins on motorcycles, and perhaps there were vehicles involved in the attack as well. All the assassins, however many there were, and yes, the Iranian regime vastly overestimates. They embellish the story to make it sound like it was dozens upon dozens attacked this poor man in his car. But however many there were, they all escaped. Assassins unknown. The default position, like I said, is to blame the Israelis. There is also reporting out there that I've seen this morning blaming the Iranian opposition group, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq. which has a very large and very important presence inside of Iran as well as outside in the diaspora. And I don't think that an outside power like Israel, even, given certainly the prowess of Mossad in any case, but would be able to pull off something like this without internal assistance inside of Iran. And so we know that the Mujahideen-e-Khalq has penetrated Iran's nuclear weapons program. As a matter of fact, the only reason we first learned about the existence of Iran's clandestine nuclear weapons program back in August of 2002 was because the Mujahideen-e-Khalq and its political umbrella group, the NCRI, National Council of Resistance of Iran, gave press conferences in Paris and Washington, D.C., and told us about that program, blew the lid off of it, which had been going on since the late 1980s, but publicly no one knew about it. The IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency of the United Nations, did not know about it, or at least pretended they didn't. So this is the kind of penetration that the MEK has within Iran's nuclear weapons program. And I think, coming on the earlier this year, January 2020, assassination of the Quds Force commander, we'll recall, right? Qasem Soleimani, another brigadier general, assassinated back in January. This really must be giving pause or the jitters to the Iranian regime to know that their not only their nuclear weapons program, but their security is so penetrated, perhaps by the MEK, perhaps by others.
Yeah, absolutely. Claire, let's back away just a minute, and I want to give some basic information, because people, look, how can people keep up with this stuff? Like, they're living their lives, and what I think we need to remember is that Iran, during the, so very long ago, when we were having all of these terrorist attacks in this country, and in the following years and days following 9/11, Iran was the world's leading sponsor of terror. They were a threat to us constantly up until President Donald Trump became president. And he pulled out of the Iranian agreement, and he put them in their place. He withdrew all kinds of economic benefits so that they've been struggling and quiet. And so no doubt with this now, whatever impasse we are in over the presidential race has been good news to the Iranians. So this is a strange time, Claire. And, I'm just wondering, let's talk for a second about the implications of this, because if Joe Biden takes over as president of the United States, what will this killing of Fakhr Zadeh, what difference will that make to his future plans in Iran?
Well, let's back up, just as you say, Sandy. Through the rest of the earlier part of this year, and back even into 2019, and we've seen a series. I mentioned of attacks. I mentioned the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, but back even into 2019. There has been a series of, mysterious attacks against various Iranian nuclear weapons facilities. Some of these are well-known places, like Natanz, the enrichment center, where a centrifuge assembly plant was destroyed. But other plants and facilities of its nuclear weapons program have been hit repeatedly without much explanation over these last couple of years. And then with the assassination of Soleimani and now Fakhrizadeh, obviously the target is Iran's nuclear weapons program, to diminish it, to cut it back, to cripple it, if possible, as much as possible, before, if a Joe Biden, Kamala Harris administration takes office in January. And obviously the reason is, as you were mentioning, Sandy, the Obama administration, for which Joe Biden was vice president, was the one that was determined to give Iran a glide path to a deliverable nuclear weapons capability in order that Iran would be the hegemon of the Middle East, the Persian Gulf region, and even beyond, and pose a threat to Israel. That was the intent. That was the purpose of the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or nuclear deal, from back in July of 2015. So these attacks, and now this assassination in particular, are clearly intended to cut back the capability of the Iranian regime to pursue those deliverable nuclear weapons, however far they already are along that path in the clandestine underground, under bunkers and tunnels locations that the IAEA and nobody else is allowed to inspect. So this is a real blow. Taking out Fakhrizadeh is a real blow to that program.
So the fear from whoever, one could speculate. If it's Israel that took him out, and if America cooperated, if we said that's fine, go ahead and do that, it might be a preparation for a potential Joe Biden takeover because of what you just said. Remember, it was, I know you remember, I'm talking to my audience, it was Barack Obama who delivered huge pallets of cash money to the Iranians. He was very friendly with the Iranians, and that's why they gained so much power. And so why would we not believe that a Joe Biden gets in the White House and John Brennan has anything to say about it? By the way, John Brennan was appalled by this, Claire. He's been on national television talking about how this was assassination and murder and unacceptable. I'd love to know what you think about that. John, again, was the CIA director under Barack Obama and Joe Biden.
Yeah, I've seen the comments made by both John Brennan and Ben Rhodes, another one, criticizing the takedown of Fakhrizadeh. And, well, of course they would. They want Iran to be the hegemon, the nuclear-capable hegemon of the Persian Gulf region. They did everything in their power during that term of office of the Obama administration, 2008 until 2016, to make sure that that would happen. The animosity, the hatred of the Jewish state of Israel cannot be overstated. And so, of course, they criticize this assassination by whomever it may have been done. And again, we don't really know. But the bottom line is that this is significant. It will definitely hamper Iran's onward development of nuclear weapons. Yes, the program will go on. Let's not kid ourselves. The program will continue as it has. But at the moment, at least, it may need to pull in a bit publicly. You mentioned this before, too, Sandy. I think this is important. The other outcome of this, despite the criticism and all of that, is that the Iranian regime, after the presidency of Donald Trump, since 2017, has pulled back. We don't see attacks on shipping in the Persian Gulf anymore, do we? We don't see American Navy officers on their knees with guns pointed at them on their own ships in the Persian Gulf. We don't see the attacks against the attacks by Iranian proxies, which it likes to use most often. Proxies like the Hashd-e-Shaabi Iraqi terror militias, or the Houthis, or even Hamas, yes, does still launch rockets and missiles into Israel. Hezbollah has been more or less quiet, as you say, these days, building tunnels, yes, which have been discovered, thankfully. But the attack level has gone down, and I think that's what you were getting at. And that's thanks to Donald Trump.
Yes.
They fear
absolutely.
Him. And that's a good thing.
Yes. Absolutely.
When our enemies fear us.
Okay, now one last thing before I let you go, Claire. Because the John Brennans and the Ben Rhodeses, I hope there's just one of them, are concerned now about what this is going to do to a Joe Biden presidency in terms of how he handles Iran. In other words, he can't just slip back into the Iran deal. There'll likely be retribution from Iran. That's what they're afraid of. And so what's your comment about that? What do you think the likelihood of that interfering with their future plans with Iran might be?
I don't think that Iran is going to move immediately into a retribution phase. I think that they're holding back, as I said now, and I think they will hold back even if a Joe Biden administration comes into office, because they find it easier to simply co-opt people like that. They find it simpler to simply roll over them. They expect them to get down on their knees and put their hands behind their heads for them. They don't need the added incentive of retaliatory attacks. And for the moment, of course, they are fearful of what a Donald Trump administration, how that response would be. But I think as far as the potential of a future Joe Biden administration, they feel that they're putty in their hands. They don't have to attack anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
Although yes. Israel, of course, is on high alert and will have to remain so.
Yeah. Yeah, so we all systems are, this is the thing is going to change for all of us, and you guys can start the music for the break. That's the thing that we have to understand is the whole world is going to shift now if Joe Biden takes the presidency, and it's going to be pretty dangerous because I think they smell weakness, and rightfully so. So, Claire, I really appreciate your time this morning, Claire Lopez. And if you, when you're in your busy writing life, if you write something about this, let us know. We'll post it. Meanwhile, I want to post an article by Gatestone, and it's called "The Killing of Nuclear Scientist May Save Countless Lives." It's an article by a retired military, American military, Richard Kemp. So we'll put that on our Facebook page to supplement what we've talked about this morning. And Claire, God bless, and thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it. We'll talk
to
you soon.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Insanity seems rampant in our nation. Reason seems to have no voice in the marketplace. The American Family Association offers a tool by which you can be heard. The AFA Action Alert is an email opportunity to contact directly our representatives, entertainment sponsors, even corporations, saying we see them, offer a better direction, and when appropriate, acknowledge a job well done. Sign up today at afaaction.net.
I think Paul is trying to communicate that salvation is by works, don't you? No, it's grace! Paul says something over and over again in every single one of his letters, and it has to do with grace. You know grace is important. We are redeemed by grace. Jesus does all the work, we just accept what he's done.
Listen for Cross-Examined with Dr. Frank Turek, Saturday morning at 9 Central, and Sunday afternoon at 4 Central, here on American Family Radio.
For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Look briefly at one of your fingers. You've just witnessed one of the greatest displays of God's creative intent there is. No other person in all the world, even an identical twin, shares your fingerprint. God specifically designed each of us to be unique. That means we shouldn't try to carbon copy anyone else in the Christian faith. If God made you an arm in his body or a kneecap, praise be to our glorious God for drawing us to become a part of his body. How freeing it is to realize that we were never meant to copy anyone but Jesus.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. Phil Waldron, a former combat officer with a specialty in electronic warfare, gave sworn testimony last week before the Pennsylvania State Senate. He flagged a spectacular spike anomaly in one batch of 600,000 ballots in which 570,000 votes went for Joe Biden and just 3,200 went for Donald Trump. These votes were processed in a time period that is not mechanically possible. So in this one batch, 99.4% of the recorded votes went for the former vice president, enough to flip the state for him. If justice is done, the election will be thrown into the House of Representatives on December 14, where Trump will almost certainly win. May God reveal everything that has been hidden in darkness, and may justice be done.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. There's a war on to determine whether our constitutional republic will survive the 2020 presidential election. The critical battles are being fought not just in courts, newsrooms, and government offices across the country, but in state legislatures that have a unique responsibility for the conduct and integrity of their voters' balloting. Legislators last week in Pennsylvania and yesterday in Arizona heard from a singularly effective warrior in these battles, retired Army Colonel and cyber and political warfare specialist Phil Waldron, who documented the comprehensive effort mounted this year to defraud voters and steal the White House, and how it was done. Colonel Waldron's testimony decisively rebuts those who insist there's no evidence of fraud in this election. All of us who love this country must ensure that his compelling research and conclusions are given their day in court and in state legislatures now. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Can you believe today is December the 1st? I can't. Oh, my goodness. What a strange year. Kind of makes me sad in a way. And maybe we should just not let these news events affect our attitude toward the season, because it is that we've got 24 days before Christmas. Anyway, it's pretty amazing. I know it's not a spiritual holiday. It's more of a man-made celebration, but it's the celebration of our Savior, the Lord Jesus, even if we don't have the exact day. So, and in honor of that, we do all kinds of stuff. And one of the things we've been trying to persuade you to help us with is Operation Christmas Child. And so many of you have done that. It's through Samaritan's Purse, and you prepare a box for a child overseas in a third world country. And we did that because they had to get those boxes sent. So that part is over. But the next part is the greatest journey. And that's where they contact these children and give them a 12-lesson discipleship course on who Jesus is and what it means to serve them. So serve him. It's a meaningful, meaty part of this whole business. We give them the fun box, and then we tell them about something that will transform their lives and help them eternally, and not just a few minutes after they take the toys out of the box. And so if you'd like to help us help Samaritan's Purse do this, what you do is it's $6 a child to provide that curriculum. It's teaching, it's the hard copy curriculum and all of that. We do it in their language. And so if you would like to help, $6 will help one child. And of course, you know math. I know you do. $60 would reach 10 children and so on and so forth. $150 would reach 25 children. And so you can kind of think about what you can afford. And that's how many kids would hear the gospel in their own language, thanks to you. If you can help us, it's 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can donate online to afr.net, afr.net. Well, I have to say, talking to Claire reminded me of a huge story that I have not gotten to with you. It happened when I was gone. And I'm sure you were, or maybe Fred, I'm not sure which day it happened, but I'm sure you did hear it on this mic, but not from me. And that is the pardon of Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, one of my heroes, one of my personal heroes. I have to say that many of us thought we didn't want President Trump initially to pardon General Flynn because he wanted the judge to do the right thing and to completely clean his record, because now he's going to have a record. He can't get rid of that. But the good news is he's pardoned. And because he was such an obstacle for Iran, shame on him. He's been demonized by the left, and I think that's one of the reasons they wanted to get rid of him, because Iran was so important to President Obama and his vice president, Joe Biden. Iran was very, very important to them. They gave them millions and millions of dollars. And Michael Flynn had a different opinion. He thought that Iran was a tremendous enemy to us. And by the way, the irony is Michael Flynn was accused, excuse me, at the suggestion of Joe Biden violating what's called the Logan Act, which is written in 1700-something, never been used on anyone. It has to, it basically says that if you're not part of the official administration, you should not be negotiating with foreign governments. Well, Michael Flynn was the incoming national security advisor for the duly elected, honest-to-goodness president-elect of the United States. This is after the electors were chosen. This is the transitional period. And he's talking to Russia about various things, and they accuse him of asking the Russians not to retaliate for Barack Obama booting several Russians out of this country because the President Trump was coming in and things might be different. That's kind of the gist of what they accused him of doing. And now we've got John Brennan and Ben Rhodes signaling to the Iranians, don't respond to that that murder of your military leader, because, you know, we're getting ready to, things are going to be different. And so, different. And they, yet they're screaming that General Flynn should never have been pardoned. It's just horrendous, horrific. I want to, though, because I just must take the moment to read to you what General Flynn said when he was pardoned last week. Okay. He said, "By Almighty God's grace and with the love and courage of my wife, Lori, the strength and fortitude of our families, and the inspiration of our friends, and every single patriot who circled me with their prayers, wisdom, and kindness, I say thank you from the bottom of my heart. For the first time in more than 4 years, and because of my fearless attorney, Sidney Powell, the guardian angel of American justice, and thousands of good people with endless energy rallying together on my behalf, I breathe freedom and liberty today." I'm going to just interject. This is my words. Michael Flynn has been under a gag order all these years, not able to even speak in his own defense because of the wonderful judge that's been Sullivan, who's been presiding over him in such a wretched and unjust way, just refusing to let him go, even though the Justice Department withdrew the charges. Let me go back now. So he hasn't been able to talk or speak or write, nothing. He was bankrupted. His family had to come to his rescue. Just this disgraceful treatment of a national hero. He goes on to say, "We are a nation founded by leaders who fought tyranny and oppression to ensure that all American citizens be treated fairly and equally across this land. These constitutional and God-given rights should never be denied or disguised behind false prosecution or political persecution out of fear, hate, or an opposing voice. Those who scowl at the very core of our republic and act from vengeance or revenge against one of us threaten the safety and security of all of us. Never again should any family or individual be so viciously targeted, maligned, smeared, and threatened, such has been the experience of my family and I. Not you or your loved ones, not me or the President Trump, or nor President Trump, our First Lady, and the Trump children. Stand with me today in renouncing this betrayal of trust that has burdened our nation, and proclaim with one united voice across this land that we will never again allow the rightful power of the citizens of this country to be uprooted, undercut, usurped, or held hostage by a coup against our nation, a duly elected president, or any future president of these United States. For over 3 decades, it has been my honor and privilege as a soldier and public servant to fight for the rights of American citizens and for the citizens of the world. I have fought alongside the bravest men and women on distant battlefields in the midst of the fire and fury of war. This fight for my life and liberties on the battlefield of justice and truth, my faith in God, and the love of the support and support of my wife Lori have seen me through." He says a lot more things. It goes on. He talks about his warrior sister, Barbara, his youngest sibling and brother, Joe, Claire Eckert, and her daughter. And he just talks about how they all pitched in to help. He's from a very large family, and what God has done through all of that. And he also says, we'll never stop fighting. And he said that he knows that things are likely going to get rough again. It's not over, but they are going to stand. He's encouraging all of us to buck up and stand strong and fight back, and that's what we're going to do. And so juxtaposed with that is this really interesting little Al Sharpton monologue from just a couple of days ago, maybe yesterday. And I thought maybe you'd just like to hear what the other side is saying, because you contrast General Flynn's thankfulness to God and the blessing and his courage to this. Clip 5.
On Tuesday, the president bestowed the traditional Thanksgiving pardon on a turkey named Corn. And the next day, granted a far less routine pardon to an agent of Turkey named Michael Flynn, Trump's disgraced former national security advisor. It's the first of what will likely be many pardons in the president's final weeks in office. But I have some advice for the president and his lackeys. Don't count your turkeys before they hatch. Just like the turkey pardoned by the president this week, which will suffer a shortened lifespan due to its pre-pardon activities, the villains in the Trump administration cannot be granted a total reprieve with a presidential pardon, because the president of the United States can only pardon federal crimes. He has absolutely no power over state charges. And nearly everyone in the Trump orbit is facing state-level liability. The president and his adult children are facing multiple tax fraud cases. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is under investigation for falsifying real estate documents. And Paul Manafort could see a revival of state charges, just to name a few. And none of those can be disappeared with a presidential pardon. The president and his cronies will be held accountable for their many crimes. The turkeys have come home to roost, and I got you.
Thank you, Mr. Sharpton. Mr. Sharpton, who has not paid taxes in I don't know how many years, never been prosecuted. The righteous indignation of Al Sharpton and the threats from Al Sharpton, and he's not the only one. Daily Beast is something that sprung off from Newsweek when Newsweek went under. And the editor-at-large, Rick Wilson, had a lot to say just a few days ago. He says, presumably others won't forget and won't forgive what Trump supporters did to America. His editorial was penned called Overdue Penalties. He said it's not enough to merely enjoy their agony and humiliation, as former Vice President Joe Biden is set to be inaugurated. It's not enough to hope they'll be shamed and correct their behavior. The dark is rising for Trump's sycophants, toadies, and enablers. Their tough guy acts and blank your feelings blank talk have become a furious whine of complaints and recriminations, as a toxic slurry of rage and despair has left a stinging bile in the back of their throats that won't go away. Trump lost, he continued, and they can't spin their way past it. Even as his lawyers, Trump's, are all but chased out of each town where they file their absurd, doomed lawsuits, the true believers still imagine some miracle emerging from the wreckage of Trump's campaign. The media apparatus that monetized the moronic state of the religion of Trumpism is still pumping their slow coach followers full of stupid, easily disproven lies. The professional class of Republicans, though, know that the bitter end is here and that their dirty half-decade of personal abnegation and degradation is coming to a sink. Blah, 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 blah. I can't finish it. Why would I? You know, so I just want to contrast the general tone of those two responses. Could I just say, if I were talking to Wilson, I would say to you, look, we are secure, many of us. We know who really is in control, and it isn't you. And you may have vengeance for a short time, but there's someone much greater who's keeping track of all of that and is the God of justice. We are not worried. And I'd say just, we're going to stand for what's right no matter what happens. With Trump in the White House or Biden in the White House, whatever happens, we're going to stand. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.